19th century, around almost one third of Presbyterian ordinands went to the mission field. At Princeton, the conservative, reformed center for theological training in the USA, almost one third of their graduates went to the mission field. It was the same in Scotland. Today, maybe 1%. We've gone from 30% going to the mission field to 1%. William Chalmers Burns, born 1815, dies 1868. Some dates, especially for Presbyterians, should be memorable. Let me give you a number. 1747. What's memorable about 1747? Maybe you young folk could write it down and find out. 1747, a young Presbyterian minister who was dying of tuberculosis knocked on the parsonage door in Northampton, Massachusetts. The minister in Northampton was Jonathan Edwards. And the young Presbyterian pastor who was dying was David Brainerd. He died later that year, 1747. What's so important about that? Well, David Brainerd had been a missionary to the Native Americans along the Susquehanna River in Pennsylvania, and he had written a diary. And before he died, he gave the diary to Jonathan Edwards. In 1749, 2 years later, Edwards, who had been so deeply affected by reading Brainerd's diary of the work of God in him and through him to the Native American Indians, Jonathan Edwards had the diary of David Brainerd published, 1749. It had an immense influence on the world of Christian mission. William Carey, who goes to India in 1793, read it. Adoniram Judson read it. Missionary after missionary read the diary of David Brainerd. I read it as a very, very young Christian. I didn't have any Christian background, no church background, no Bible background. But very quickly, because I had always been a reader, I was introduced to good books. And I read David Brainerd's diary, and it blew the socks off me. I remember reading it, and David Brainerd said, whenever he woke, he would get up and pray. I thought, that's a good thing to do. 2 o'clock in the morning, I woke up, got out of my bed, got down on my knees, and 2 hours later, I woke up stiff. I thought, maybe that's not quite the thing for me. David Brainerd's diary was published and republished about 30 times in the next half century. It had a remarkable influence on young men who later gave themselves to the cause of the gospel throughout the world. And one of those men was William Chalmers Burns. He was a Scotsman. His father was a Reformed Presbyterian pastor, a godly man, a good man. William was a wonderful student. He was very bright, and he excelled at languages. In those days, in every secondary school in Scotland, Latin and Greek was taught. Those were the days. But although Burns was raised in a godly home, and although every day his father would hold family worship and catechize the children, William knew the whole catechism probably by the age of 10 or 11, the whole 107 question and answers. My son-in-law, Graham, he took till he was 12. He was a slow learner, slow learner. William had set his heart on being a lawyer. He thought that's the way to position and money. Be a lawyer. One of my boys is a lawyer, but that's another story. He's a godly lawyer. So William went to Aberdeen University at the age of 16. But something happened when he was 16. The same thing that happened to me when I was 16. His parents had prayed for him since before he was born. One of his sisters especially prayed for him and wrote to him, "Oh, William, when will you come to Jesus?" And one day he did. One day he did, the fruit of his parents' prayers, his sister's pleadings, her writings. And William tells us in his diary that from that moment, when the gospel, the good news of God, broke into his mind and heart, everything changed. From that moment he wrote, and I quote his words, "I will from this moment on devote all that I am to my Savior Jesus Christ." He stopped thinking about the law. He wasn't quite sure what he was going to do. He was excelling at university. He was top in Greek and Latin. And one day he walked 36 miles from where he was studying to where his parents lived. His father was now minister in Kilsyth between Glasgow and Edinburgh. Now, for those of you who know any church history, Kilsyth is very famous because in 1742, while the Great Awakening is going on in America, not the United States of America, but in America, down the eastern seaboard in particular, a similar work of God was going on in central Scotland. So William's father, also called William, was minister in Kilsyth, and William Chalmers Burns walked 36 miles. And he opened the kitchen door of the manse, and his mother looked at him, "Willie, what are you doing here?" And he said, "Mama, what would you say if God was calling me to be a gospel minister?" Well, his parents were overjoyed. And so William's direction of life was to commit himself to theological studies. And he excelled in those as well. He was a brilliant linguist. You know, God often uniquely raises up men and women at significant times to do significant work. I mean, most of us are journeymen. You know, most of us are thankful for the one talent, or maybe the two talents that the Lord gives us. But the Lord sometimes is pleased to give people an abundance of capacities and abilities. And that was William Chalmers Burns. And from about 1837, so he's born in 1815, 1837, so he's 22, do the math, as you say, do the maths, as we say. We add an S because it's mathematics and not mathematic, if you can get that. He knew God was calling him to be a missionary. He thought it would be to India, because the Church of Scotland, the National Presbyterian Church, the National Kirk, had begun to send out missionaries to India, Alexander Duff preeminently among them. But it would take another 10 years for Burns to get, not to India, but to China. So what happened? Well, this is what happened. He graduated in theology, was licensed as a preacher, and a man called Robert Murray McChain, hands up if you've heard that name, Robert Murray McChain was only 3 years older than William Chalmers Burns. And because of his health, 1839, McChain was told he needed to take a break from ministry in Dundee, about 50 miles, 60 miles north of Edinburgh, an industrial city on the east coast of Scotland. He was told he needed to go to a drier, warmer climate. So he headed for Palestine, as it was, with a committee of inquiry for the furtherance of the gospel among the Jews. Just as a little sideline, McChain tells us in his diary that when he reached Budapest, there was a Scottish mission to the Jews in Budapest in Hungary, he says, "Today I met a Jewish rabbi. He spoke no English. I spoke no Magyar. We conversed in Latin." Now, we laugh. Any intelligent university man, very few women, could do that. Change days. Education's so dumbed down today. So McChain decides to ask this young man that nobody knows anything about to fulfill his pulpit while he's away. Now, why did he ask William Chalmers Burns, this young, recently graduated licentiate that no one's heard of? McChain said, "I had a premonition." Did you know that Reformed ministers have premonitions? He said, "I had a premonition that God would use this young man greatly." And so it turned out. Burns goes to Dundee, to St. Peter's Presbyterian Church, and almost immediately there is a something about his preaching. The Spirit of God comes in remarkable ways. Dozens are converted. Hundreds are flocking into the church. There are queues to get into church, morning, afternoon, evening. God gloriously blesses Burns' preaching. On one famous occasion, he preached the sermon. You may know the title, "No Cross, No Crown." It was electric. Not everyone liked it. The press thought it was demeaning that men should preach with such loudness and passion. It was giving religion a bad name. At the same time, in Kilsyth, where his father was the minister, was a communion season. Now, in Scotland, it's still the case in the north of Scotland, churches would have seasons of communion, maybe four times a year. It was like a mini convention. They would have services on the Thursday, the Friday, the Saturday, three times on the Sunday, and then once on the Monday. And people would go from communion season to communion season. So you weren't just communicating four times a year. And his father invited his son to preach during the communion season. And observers said it was as if heaven had come down and glory filled our souls. It seemed that everywhere William Chalmers Burns went, the Spirit of God went with him in a remarkable way. One feature was very significant about his preparation in those days. He was a brilliant linguist, Greek, Hebrew, Latin, it just poured out of him. But more and more, he spent hours in prayer. Oh, he prepared well. He pondered, he meditated on the text, but hours and hours he would spend in prayer. Keep that in mind when he goes to China. But it's still another 8 years before he goes to China. So what happens? Well, Burns believes that the time is not yet right for him. And he becomes effectively an itinerating evangelist throughout Scotland, England. He goes to Ireland, where he's pelted with mud and rocks, you know, south of Ireland, very Roman. He goes to Quebec, and again, he experiences great hostility. He has learned French, to preach fluently in French. He can preach fluently in French, German, Scots, Gaelic, Latin. Everywhere he goes, his ministry is anointed, often to the saving of many. But as you know, the gospel comes in a bifurcated way. We are an aroma of Christ to those who are being saved and to those who are perishing. To the one, a savor of life unto life, to the other, a savor of death unto death. And so for the next 7 or so years, Burns itinerates. But he has never lost the conviction that the day will come when God will send him as a missionary. He still thinks India, but one day he sees an advert in the national press, as you had in those days, from the English Presbyterian Church. Much of Presbyterianism in England had gone Unitarian, but there was still a good core. Wanted missionary for China. Burns applies, goes to London to be interviewed, and he was asked this question: when can you go? And he replied, tomorrow. Tomorrow. Well, it took another month or so to get things organized, but Burns was saying, here am I, send me. I'm not my own. It's not for me to dictate to the Lord when or if I should go. Here I am. I can go tomorrow if that's appropriate. His brother, who later wrote this large biography of his life, comes down from Scotland and sees him off. It takes about 6 months for the ship to go from London, if you can picture the geography, to Shanghai, China. During the 6 months, he teaches himself Mandarin. Now, we're not quite sure how he managed to do it. We know he had a Chinese Bible and a dictionary, and it seems, because of his capacity with morphology, it seems that he just worked out what was what, and he must have been introduced to sounds. We're just not sure. But however he did it, the moment the ship arrived in China, you know the first thing he did? Well, you don't know the first thing he did. He went to the local prison, to death row, to preach Jesus Christ to men who are about to be executed. That's the first thing he did. The second thing he did, he started to translate some of the Psalms and Pilgrim's Progress into Chinese. Now, if you know anything about those days, you'll know that there was mission work. I do this, and my children say, Dad, people don't know what you're... I've got a map of the world in my head. You know, I'm an unusual little boy. I love maps. Joan can draw maps, but I can visualize maps. The Eastern Seaboard. You know, right down Shanghai, right down Guangzhou. Missionaries were restricted to a very narrow corridor. They weren't allowed to go to inland. But the desire in Burns's heart was to preach the gospel where it had never been preached. He wanted to go to the unreached peoples. He met Hudson Taylor. Heard of Hudson Taylor, China Inland Mission? Hudson Taylor was profoundly impressed and deeply affected by William Chalmers Burns. He said, "He must be the most prayerful man I've ever met in my life." And when I read that, it reminds me of the first time I actually encountered the name William Chalmers Burns. I was a very young Christian, and I bought a little book published by the Banner of Truth Trust entitled Five Pioneer Missionaries. Anyone read it? Five Pioneer Missionaries. John Elliott, you know John Elliott? Sure you do. Hopefully you do. If you don't, shame upon you. John Elliott, find out about him. Puritan, went across, late 17th century, translated the Bible into Algonquin. John Elliott, Henry Martin, Cambridge graduate, mathematician who goes to Persia and India. William Chalmers Burns, David Brainerd, and John G. Payton. And I read the little chapter on William Chalmers Burns, and it gripped me. And this is the reason why it gripped me. Right at the outset of the chapter, and it was a collection of essays. And the chapter on William Chalmers Burns begins like this. I can't quote it verbatim, but I know most of it, I think. A missionary from China was home in Glasgow. And he was giving a lecture on his travels in China. So, no internet, no TV, no radio. People would flock to hear about the fabulous Orient. And so this missionary gave a talk about his travels in China and whatever. And there was a Q&A at the end. And someone asked this question, "In your travels in China, did you perchance meet a Scottish Presbyterian missionary called William Chalmers Burns?" And the missionary replied, "Know him? All China knows him. He's the holiest man alive." Now that's hyperbole, granted. But those words gripped me, haunted me. I've never forgotten them. The holiest man alive. Not the best preacher who's ever lived. Not the most intellectually, theologically capable. He was all of those things. The holiest man alive. That's what deeply impressed Hudson Taylor. And Hudson Taylor impressed William Chalmers Burns because it was Taylor's example of wearing Chinese dress and the pigtail, becoming all things to all men, that scandalized the missionaries down the East Coast who were very into propriety. It's as if they were exporting Englishness and Americanness, and Taylor and Burns wanted to export the gospel. So they had this symbiotic relationship. And so Burns ventured into the interior. And for 5 years, he saw nothing. No fruit. He just kept going on. Robbed. Hounded. He just kept going on. And then in a place called Pechuya, I don't know how you pronounce it in Mandarin, P-E-C-H-U-I-A, Pechuya, the Lord began to touch people's hearts. And little congregations began to be formed. Now, Burns saw himself as an evangelist, not... He was a church planter, but he believed his calling was to see a congregation established, elders appointed, and then he'd move on. And that's what he did. For 21 years, he labored in China. He went home once for 4 weeks. And he only went home because a colleague was dying. Well, he didn't know he was dying. He was very unwell. And when they arrived back in Scotland, he died. And he just turned around and went back to China. When he died in 1868, all his effects were brought back to Scotland. And there's a beautiful little story, boys and girls, you'll hopefully like this. His remains, his little bundle of effects, were contained in a little box, about that, by that. And a little girl said to her father, "He must have been very poor. He was the richest man in China. But he had no material possessions at all. In fact, 1 year, he took his little salary for the year and he gave it to the poor. You need it more than me." William Chalmers Burns, born in 1815. Now, 1815, if I asked 100 people in Britain with a semblance of education, what's significant about 1815? They'd say, oh, easy, easy. The Battle of Waterloo, the vanquishing of Napoleon, and the overthrow of French Egalite Fraternite. Egalite Fraternite. What's another one? Egalite, Fraternity, Liberty. Imagine forgetting that. 1815. But actually, the two most significant things in 1815 were, number one, the birth of William Chalmers Burns, and secondly, the publication on January the 1st, 1815, of a sermon by Thomas Chalmers. Heard of Thomas Chalmers? Every Presbyterian should know about Thomas Chalmers. He was the greatest Christian in 19th century Scotland, and probably, I'm a little biased, but probably the greatest Scotsman of the 19th century. He had been converted while in the ministry, and he published a sermon with the title, "The Expulsive Power of a New Affection." How do you get people not to love the world and the things that are in the world? Well, you can tell them the world and its desires are passing away. 1 John, it's fine, that's okay. You can tell them that the things of this world come and go, they mainly go. Don't set your heart upon them. True. But Chalmers understood that if you want Christian believers not to love the world, but to give themselves unreservedly to Jesus Christ, there needs to be the expulsive power of a new affection. They need to have a new love taking root within them that dispels all other loves. Now, why mention that? Because that sums up William Chalmers Burns. He was born in that year. He actually studied later under Thomas Chalmers in Edinburgh. His name Chalmers, William Chalmers Burns, got nothing to do with Thomas Chalmers. It's a family name. It was that sermon that typified the whole course of William Chalmers Burns' life. Why are you turning your back on family, friends, ecclesiastical eminence, to go to the heartlands of China, the expulsive power of a new affection? Jesus Christ is worth it. But what can we learn from William Chalmers Burns? I've just given you, by the five pioneer missionaries, 30 pages on Burns. The five are great, so it's a great read. What can we learn? Number one, he understood that conversion means you're not your own. You've been bought with a price. It wasn't for him to decide what to do or where to go. Like Isaiah 6, the Lord says, "Whom shall I send? Who will go for us?" The Holy Trinity. And Isaiah says, "Here am I, send me." Now, it's only after that the Lord says, "Thank you very much, Isaiah. I'm going to send you to a people. They're never going to listen to you. They're going to hate you. They're going to make your life miserable. Ultimately, if tradition is followed, they're going to saw you in two." And Isaiah doesn't say, "Lord, I'm willing to go, but could you please tell me what's going to be involved? Is it going to be hard? Is it going to be easy?" The Lord just says, "Who's going to go?" And Isaiah says, "Well, here am I." That was William Chalmers Burns. He understood that conversion meant he was not his own. Secondly, his parents loved him but let him go. I've heard it said many times, I can't say for myself, I know this to be true, although I actually feel it to be true, that the greatest hindrance to young people going is their parents, who don't want them to leave. I want my children to be near me. I want my grandchildren to be around me. This life is very short. Eternity is very long. There's time enough for our children and grandchildren to be with us. His parents loved him, but let him go. We'll come back to that with John Gibson Paton tomorrow. His parents loved him, but let him go. Parents, do you love the Lord enough to let your children go without hindering them? Thirdly, he was dogged. You know, we talk a lot about gifts, and that's good. You know, God gives, there isn't Christ, the ascended Christ gives gifts. But sheer doggedness is a wonderful thing. People who just go on. Most of you won't know the name Eric Alexander. Does anyone? Oh, wonderful. I had the vast privilege of taking his funeral, preaching at it 3 years ago. He was a mentor to me, modeled everything that I think a gospel preacher should be. He told me once, when he was a young minister, he went down to London with a friend, went to hear Dr. Martin Lloyd-Jones at Westminster Chapel. The doctor was in his prime, and I heard the doctor once in the flesh. I was a young convert, and this wee man in a black coat preached, and it was absolutely gripping from first sentence to last. And Eric told me, he said, the doctor preached wonderfully, and after the service in Westminster Chapel, there were a queue of people waiting to talk to the doctor. And as they got nearer, Eric said, he just kept saying the same thing to everyone. Go on, go on. And I thought to myself, said Eric, is that all the doctor's got to say? These people have been waiting to thank him, and all he's saying is go on. And then Eric said this to me, Ian, what better thing could he have said? Go on. And that was William Chalmers Burns. He just was dogged. He just kept going on. And the last lesson, there's a number in my head, but we'll finish with this because the time is gone. He understood that prayer must be fundamental, not supplemental, central, not peripheral. You know, being a church isn't rocket science. Acts 2, verse 42, the great company at Pentecost, they devoted themselves. That's the key thing, pros carter eo. You know the verb pros carter eo? Very strong. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, the fellowship, the breaking of bread, and hoi prosuchoi, the prayers. Every time the church gathered, people were there. It wasn't an optional extra. Are you coming to prayer? Well, no. You go. It's what the church does. This is the church. The ministry of the Word of God, the fellowship of the saints, sharing in the sacraments, and praying. Corporate prayer. Not many things distress me in the Christian life. Lots of things disappoint me, mainly myself. But I was told 2 or 3 years ago that 90% of PCA churches don't have an evening service. I couldn't believe that. I thought, really? And 95% have no corporate gathering for prayer. Do you know the only attraction in a prayer meeting? God. When Joan's been a Christian all her days, but when I was converted and when Joan started going to a Presbyterian church at university in Aberdeen, she knew Sinclair before I did. He was 5-6 years ahead of her. I was simply told you've got 3 non-negotiables. Morning and evening worship, and whenever the church gathers to prayer, to pray, doesn't matter when it is. And I just thought that's what Christians do. I've got no background, I don't know any. That's just what you do. Burns devoted himself to prayer. The holiest man alive. Well, but that statement gripped me. I've never forgotten it. And when people ask me, who are your great heroes in the Christian life? In the past. I've one or two for the present. In the past. I always say I've got 3. John Calvin, John Owen, and William Chalmers Burns, born 1815, died 1868, of whom this world was not worthy. Thank you for your attention.